This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents The Upside of Unrequited by Becky Albertalli, performed by Ariel Delisle. One. I'm on the toilet at the 9:30 club, and I'm wondering how mermaids pee. This isn't random. There's a mermaid Barbie attached to the door of the bathroom here, which is a pretty odd choice for a bathroom mascot, if that's even a thing. Bathroom mascots. But the door opens, letting in a burst of music from the club. This is not a bathroom that you can enter discreetly. A stall door clicks shut just as I'm opening mine. I step out. There are mirrors above all the sinks. I suck in my cheeks so it looks like I have cheekbones. And it's quite a transformation. Sometimes I have the idea that I could maintain this. I could spend the rest of my life gently biting the insides of my cheeks. Except for the fact that it makes my lips look weird. Also, biting your cheeks definitely gets in the way of talking, and that's a little hardcore, even for me. Even for cheekbones. Shit. There's a voice from the stall, low and sort of husky.
Hey, can you hand me some toilet paper?
She's talking to me. It takes me a moment to realize that. Oh, sure. I grab a wad of it to pass under the girl's door, and her hand brushes mine as she takes it.
Okay, you just saved my life.
I saved a life. Right here in the bathroom of the 9:30 Club. She flushes and steps out of the stall, and the first thing I notice is her shirt. Red cotton, with an awesomely artistic rendering of the letters G and J. I actually don't think most people would recognize them as letters. But I do. That's a Georgie James shirt. The girl raises her eyebrows, smiling.
You know Georgie James?
Yeah. I smile back. Georgie James. They were a local DC band, but they broke up years ago. You never really expect to meet anyone our age who's heard of them, but my sister used to be obsessed. The girl shakes her head.
That is awesome.
It is the awesomest, I say, and the girl laughs, one of those quiet laughs that bubbles up from your throat. Then I really look at her, and oh, she's beautiful. This girl... She's short and slender and East Asian, and her hair is such a dark shade of purple, it's almost not purple. Thick framed glasses. And there's something about the shape of her lips. She has very well-defined lips. Cassie would definitely be into her. The glasses especially. And the Georgie James shirt.
Anyway, thanks for saving my butt.
Literally. She shakes her head.
Okay, not my butt.
I giggle.
It's okay. Thanks for saving my labia.
I shrug and smile back at her. There's just something about this kind of moment. This tiny thread connecting me to a total stranger. It's the kind of thing that makes the universe feel smaller. I really love that. I drift back into the club, letting the music settle around me. It's a local band I've never heard of, but the floor is packed. People seem to like how loud the drums are. I'm surrounded by dancing, moving bodies, and dimly lit faces, heads tilted up at the stage. Suddenly, everything starts to feel huge and impossible again. I think it's because there are so many couples, laughing and leaning and earnestly making out. There's this feeling I get when I watch people kiss. I become a different form of matter. Like they're water, and I'm an ice cube. Like I'm the most alone person in the entire world.
Molly!
Shouts Cassie, waving her hands. She and Olivia are near the speakers, and Olivia is actually wincing.
She's not exactly a 9:30 club kind of girl. I'm not sure I am either, but Cassie can be pretty persuasive. I should put this out there. My twin sister and I are nothing alike. We don't even look alike. We're both white, and we're both sort of medium height, but in every other way, we're opposites. Cassie's blonde, green-eyed, and willowy. I'm not any of those things. I'm brown-haired and brown-eyed, and nowhere close to willowy. I met your dream girl, I tell Cassie immediately. What? I made a friend in the bathroom, and she's really cute, and I think you guys should fall in love and get married and have babies. Cassie does her raise and wrinkle eyebrow thing. She's one of those blonde girls with brown eyebrows, and it's hard to explain how perfectly it works on her. How does that happen? How does love happen? No, how do you make friends in a bathroom? Cass, you're missing the point. This is the dream girl. Wait a minute. Cassie flicks my arm. Is this a Molly crush? Is this crush number 27? What? No. I blush. Oh my God, your first girl crush. I'm so proud. We're at 27 already? Olivia asks, which I am choosing to interpret as her being impressed with me. So, I'm a prolific crusher. That's not a bad thing. Not that this is a Molly crush. I shake my head and cover my eyes. I feel a little helium-brained. Maybe this is what it's like to be drunk. My cousin Abby told me being drunk feels like you're floating. I wonder if it's possible to get drunk without drinking. Hey. Cassie peels my hands away from my face. You know it's my job to mess with you. But before I can reply, Olivia holds up her phone. Hey, it's 11:45, she says. Should we be heading to the metro? Oh, I say. The metro closes at midnight. Also, I'm starting work tomorrow. I have an actual summer job, which means I should probably get at least a little bit of sleep so I don't pass out at the register. I hear that's not professional. We weave toward the exit, and it's honestly a relief to step outside. It's cool for June, and the air feels nice against my legs. I'm wearing this cotton dress that was plain black when I got it, but I sewed on a doily lace Peter Pan collar and some lace around the bottom. It's completely improved. Cassie and Olivia both text as they walk, and they don't even trip over the curb. I admire that. I hang back a little, just watching them. They fit here, on U Street. Cassie's got this perfect messy ponytail, and she's dressed like she threw on the first thing to fall out of her closet. Which is probably accurate, but it works on her. More than works. She has this way of making everyone else look overdressed. And Olivia is tall, with this fresh-scrubbed kind of prettiness, except she has a nose-stud and blue-streaked hair that make you look at her twice. And I guess she's considered chubby, but not as much as I am. I do wonder, sometimes, what people think when they see me. It's strange how you can sometimes still feel self-conscious around people you've known your whole life. Literally, we've known Olivia since our moms were in La Leche League together. And for 17 years, it's been the four of us. Cassie, Olivia, me, and my cousin Abby. Except Abby moved to Georgia last summer. And ever since, Cassie's been dragging Olivia and me to the stuff she used to do with Abby. Open mic nights and concerts and wandering down H Street. A year ago, Olivia and I would have been tucked up on her living room couch, watching Steven Universe with Titania, her Schnauzer Beagle mix. Instead, I'm surrounded by people who are infinitely cooler than me. Everyone on U Street is doing one of three things right now. Laughing, smoking, or making out. I turn toward the metro pole, and right away, I see the dream girl. Cass, it's her! I pull on Cassie's tank top. In the red, look. The girl leans forward, digging through her purse. There are these two hipster white guys hovering near her, both absorbed in their phones. A redhead wearing skinny jeans, and a dark-haired one with dramatic bangs. But you never explained why she's Cassie's dream girl, Olivia says. The girl looks up from her purse, and Olivia turns away quickly. But she sees me. The dream girl waves, and I wave back.
Oh, she's cute, Cassie whispers.
I told you, I grin.
She's walking over here.
And she is. The dream girl is walking toward us, smiling. So now, Cassie's smiling. She's staring at the ground, but I can tell from her cheeks.
Hi again, says the girl.
I smile. Hi.
My savior.
This girl must seriously hate drip drying.
I don't think I even introduced myself,
she says.
I'm Mina.
I'm Molly.
Your shirt, Cassie says, is the most perfect thing I have ever seen in my entire life. I'm just...
She shakes her head. Mina laughs.
Thank you.
I'm Cassie, by the way, and I've never met anyone who's heard of Georgie James.
Okay, that's bullshit. I'm standing right here.
You know what's funny?
Mina starts to say, but then the dramatic bangs boy pokes her arm.
Eeny meeny, let's go.
He looks up, catching my eye over Cassie's shoulder.
Hi. Nice to meet you guys, but we have to catch this train.
Oh, shit,
says Mina.
Okay, well,
said we,
Cassie says quickly. And somehow it happens. Our groups merge. Cassie and Mina fall into step beside each other, and Olivia's right behind them, in her own world, texting. I step onto the escalator and lean into the handrail, trying not to look like a sheep that lost its herd. Molly Peskin-Suso, disoriented introvert, alone in the wild. Until I look up and realize, I'm not actually alone. The hipster boys are a step below me on the escalator. I accidentally lock eyes with the redhead, who asks,
Why do you look familiar?
I don't know.
Well, I'm Will.
I'm Molly.
Like the drug,
says Bangs. Like the drug. Like I'm a person you would associate with drugs. The train pulls into the station almost as soon as we step off the escalator, and we have to sprint to catch it. I slide into a seat, leaving room for Cassie, but she plops down next to Mina. Olivia settles into the seat beside me instead. And then, moments later, Mina's hipster boys drift toward us. Bangs is reading something on his phone, but the red-haired guy grips the pole and smiles down at us. I look up at him. Will, right?
Okay.
So he's cute. He's a tiny bit really extremely cute.
Good memory,
he says. And then Olivia introduces herself, and there's this weird hanging pause. I wish I were the kind of person who knows how to fill a silence. I'm not. Olivia's definitely not.
Oh, and this is Max,
Will says after a moment. Bangs glances up from his phone with a tiny smile.
What's up?
And, he's cute too. Except, no. I'd actually describe him as hot. He's one of those guys who's so hot, he's not even cute. But he should rein in the bangs.
So who does Molly look like?
Will asks, staring me down.
Sorry, but it's driving me crazy.
Max appraises me, pressing his lips together.
No idea. She seriously looks like someone.
Actually, I get this a lot. I think I must have one of those stupidly generic faces. Weirdly, three entirely unrelated people have told me I look like this particular teen actress from the 70s, though I'm sort of a fat version of her. And strangers are always telling me I look like their cousin or someone from their summer camp. It freaks me out just a little bit. Like, there's this part of me that wonders whether I actually am related to all these cousins and camp friends. Here's the part where I should probably mention that Cassie and I are sperm donor babies. So that's a thing in my life, that tiny niggling idea that everyone I meet might actually be my half-sibling.
I'm just going to gawk at you until I figure it out,
Will says. Across the aisle, Cassie snorts, and I suddenly realize she and Mina are watching us. They look extremely entertained. Heat rises in my cheeks.
Okay,
I say, blinking. The train slows to a stop, and Olivia stands.
Well, here's Chinatown.
That's us, too,
Will says. I guess that's not surprising. Half the world gets off here to transfer. The doors spring open, and Cassie and Mina trail behind us as we step onto the platform. Cassie's typing something into her phone.
Where are you guys headed?
Will asks, still staring a little too hard at my face. Tacoma Park, Red Line?
Oh, okay. Opposite direction. We're Bethesda,
he says.
So, I guess this is goodbye.
I never really know the protocol for this kind of situation. It's like when you're in line at a store and a grandma starts telling you all about her grandchildren or her arthritis, and you smile and nod along. But then it's your turn to check out, so you're just like, okay, well, goodbye forever. Which is kind of tragic, if you really think about it. There's a little computer sign that says how long you have until each train gets in. Red Line to Glenmont arrives in 10 minutes. That's us. But the Red Line train to Shady Grove is basically pulling in now. Will and Max and Mina leap up the escalator to catch it. By the time we reach our platform, their train has already left the station. So, that's it. 2. Except Cassie has Mina's number.
It shouldn't surprise me, since Cassie's great at getting girls' numbers. Sometimes she gets a number and immediately forgets about it. Or she hooks up with a girl once and then loses the number on purpose. Cassie can be kind of ruthless. Olivia nudges me.
That Will guy likes you.
What?
That's a thing. You pretend to recognize someone as an excuse to talk to them.
According to who?
The internet.
She gives a very serious nod.
Olivia is a very serious person in general.
I honestly think there are two kinds of quiet people. There's the kind like me, who are secretly full of storms and spinning gears. And then there's the kind like Olivia, who is the actual personification of an ocean on a sunny day. I don't mean that she's simple. There's just something peaceful about her. There always has been. She likes dragons and stargazing and those calendars with paintings of fairies on them. And she's been dating the same guy since we were 13. Evan Schulmeister. She met him at summer camp.
Hey, guess what?
Cassie pops up over the back of the seat in front of me.
Your boy is single.
What are you talking about?
Your ginger? Mr. Peach Butt Hipster Pants?
He's single and ready to mingle. She waves her phone at me.
Mina confirmed it.
Cassie? She grins.
You're welcome. Mina's going to get the ball rolling.
I freeze. What?
You think he's cute, right?
I don't respond. I just gape at her, and Olivia giggles.
Because you looked pretty happy to be talking to him.
Cassie pokes my arm.
Look, I know your crush face.
I don't have a crush face. Holy shit, do I have a crush face? Does the entire world know every time I think a guy is cute? My phone buzzes in my pocket, startling me. A text from Abby.
Molly, tell me about the hot redhead guy.
Are you kidding me? I show Cassie the phone. You told Abby?
Possibly.
I feel sick. I might actually throw up. Preferably all over Cassie, who's now texting again. Probably about me. And my supposed giant crush on some guy I talked to for 5 minutes. Cassie always thinks she knows me better than I know myself. I mean, yes, Will is pretty fucking cute. Olivia gives me this tiny smile.
You look so horrified right now, Molly.
I shrug wordlessly.
I thought you wanted a boyfriend.
Exactly, Cassie interjects, turning back to us suddenly.
Like, this whole Molly thing with the secret crushes that go nowhere? I'm over it.
Oh, you're over it? My throat tightens. I'm sorry boys don't like me.
That is such bullshit, Molly. You don't even talk to them.
Here we go. Cassie's soapbox. The fact that I've had 26 crushes and exactly 0 kisses. Apparently, it's because I need to woman up. If I like a guy, I'm supposed to tell him. Maybe in Cassie's world, you can do that and have it end in making out. But I am not so sure it works that way for fat girls. I don't know. I just like to be careful about this stuff. Cassie leans over the seat, toward me, and her expression softens.
Look, I'm not going to embarrass you. You trust me, right?
I shrug.
Then let's do this. I'm going to get you a boyfriend.
I push my bangs out of my face.
I don't think it's that easy.
I hit her with this particular facial expression of mine, known to my moms as the Molly face. It involves eyebrows and a certain twist of the mouth, and it conveys infinite, everlasting skepticism.
I'm telling you, it is.
But it's not. I don't think she gets it. There's a reason I've had 26 crushes and no boyfriends. I don't entirely understand how anyone gets a boyfriend or a girlfriend. It just seems like the most impossible odds. You have to have a crush on the exact right person at the exact right moment, and they have to like you back. A perfect alignment of feelings and circumstances. It's almost unfathomable that it happens as often as it does. I don't know why my heart is beating so quickly. The train pulls into Tacoma, and Cassie stands abruptly.
And I need to know if Mina's queer.
Aww, I say. Look who has a crush face now.
Why don't you just ask her? Olivia says.
Yeah, no. Cassie shakes her head.
Okay, let's see if she's on Facebook.
She types while she walks.
How do you even search for someone?
Are you kidding? I ask. This is a fundamental difference between us. I was basically born knowing how to casually stalk people on social media. But I guess Cassie is more the kind of person who gets casually stalked.
Want me to ask Will, since he's apparently my future boyfriend?
Hush.
She's still staring at her phone.
I mean, I'm sure it's a total coincidence that Cassie wants to turn this particular boy into my boyfriend. I bet it has nothing to do with him being friends with a dream girl.
Cassie gets off the escalator with a little hop, and Olivia and I follow her through the turnstiles. There's a couple making out against a smart trip machine, which is definitely not how you're supposed to use smart trip machines.
I look away quickly.
Are you still texting Mina? I ask.
She smiles.
I'm not telling you.
But she will. No question. Because once you've shared a uterus, there's no such thing as a secret. Of course, I sleep terribly. I'm up for hours, staring at the ceiling. I keep remembering little moments from tonight. It's like my brain won't stop spinning. Will squinting at my face, trying to place it. Olivia's blue-streaked hair, extra bright beneath the fluorescent lights of the metro. And the tiny secret smile on Cassie's face every time her phone buzzed. Certain nights have this kind of electricity. Certain nights carry you to a different place from where you started. I think tonight was one of the special ones, but I can't pinpoint why. Which is strange. I drift off to sleep, finally, and it feels like only seconds have passed when my phone buzzes with a text.
Are you up?
Smiley face. It's Cassie. There's this horrible taste in my mouth, and my eyes feel sore and crusty. I guess it's fitting. I managed to get drunk last night on absolutely no alcohol. Now I have a non-alcoholic hangover. I stare at the screen. My phone buzzes again.
Molly, wake up! It's your first day of work!
I write back. I'm coming. I add a sleepy face emoji. She sends back this horrible wide-awake emoji with giant eyes. I send a frowny face back. My head feels heavy on the pillow, and I think I weigh 1,000,000 pounds. But I force myself out of bed and pull on this ruffled dress from ModCloth with leggings, and I take my pill. I've been on Zoloft for 4 years. I used to get panic attacks in the middle school cafeteria. Long story. Anyway, when I step into the hallway, the air smells like butter and bacon. We are definitely the kind of Jews who eat bacon.
Is that the young professional? Asks Patty.
Patty is one of my moms. She pops out from the kitchen, wearing an oversized batik tunic.
Here, bring these to the table.
She hands me a plate stacked high with pancakes.
Okay. You look kind of out of it, sweetie. You all right?
Yeah, I'm... I look at the pancakes. What are these supposed to be?
Hearts,
she says. There's flour on her chin.
Oh.
I guess they kind of look like penises.
Yep.
And scrotums, she adds. Mom, that's so appetizing. Honestly, it's not the first time Patty has thrown down the word scrotum in reference to a meal. She's a midwife, so I may be a little too used to hearing her talk about this stuff. Once, she spent an entire drive to the mall explaining to Cassie and me that the so-called doggy lipstick was really the dog's penis coming out of the shaft. She seemed to know a lot of the anatomical details. I don't think either Cassie or I will ask about the lipstick again.
You should let your brother try one,
she says. I nod.
Zave loves scrotums.
Patty raises her eyebrows. She takes the plate back, and I peek into the dining room. Of course, everyone's already awake. Nadine is a teacher, so even in the summer, her body is used to waking up butt early, as she calls it. Sometimes she calls it the ass crack of dawn. And Xavier wakes up butt early because he's a butt early kind of baby.
Don't drop that, Nadine says, giving him the evil eye.
Xavier gives me a giant grin from his high chair and says,
Mama,
which means Molly.
So, here's us in a nutshell.
Patty used a sperm donor to conceive Cassie and me. Nadine used the same donor 2 years ago for Xavier. Strangers have a really hard time wrapping their minds around that. There's this subset of people who like to inform me that Xavier is my half-brother, not my real brother. They're the same people who tell me Abby's not really my cousin. Nadine's not really my mother. I'm pretty sure people wouldn't question any of this if Nadine, Abby, and Xavier were white. Needless to say, I hate these people. Xavier flings a chunk of banana to the floor and starts whimpering.
Dude, no,
Nadine tells him.
Banana's gone. You're SOL.
Do you even know what that means? Cassie asks from across the table.
I know so much more than you think I do,
Nadine grins. Then Xavier lets out another goat wail, and she leans over to kiss his head.
Hey, Xavier Zave, be cool.
Xavier Zave, like Flavor Flav? Nadine is just like this. Patty walks in with a plate of bacon pressed between paper towels.
Hope you're ready,
she says to Cassie. Cassie's love of bacon is well documented and notorious. But she leans back, smiling.
I'm actually not hungry.
Who are you and what have you done with Cassie?
Nadine asks, eyes narrowing. Cassie laughs and shrugs, and I notice she hasn't touched her food. Not a bite. And it's a little surprising. Normally, Cassie's one of those skinny girls who eats like she's about to go into hibernation.
I'm serious, kitty cat. What's going on?
Nothing. I'm not...
She trails off, hands disappearing under the table. She glances downward quickly. She's reading a text. From Mina. I'm sure of it. Probably scheming about how to get Will to date me. My whole face heats up just thinking about it.
So, Molly, how are you feeling?
Nadine asks.
Are you nervous? Are you freaking out?
About what?
About your big day. About entering the world of the working.
I wrinkle my brow.
You realize this isn't like a brain surgery residency, right?
I'm working in a store.
Mo-mo-mo-mo,
Zave interjects.
Ka-ka-ka-ka.
Cassie gives him the side eye.
Hey, stop calling me that.
Never stop calling her that, says Nadine.
Cassie makes a face, and then she slides her foot against mine under the table, lengthwise, toe to heel. Our feet have always been the same size, almost to the millimeter, I guess we grow at the exact same rate.
Hey, when are you leaving?
Cassie leans forward on her fists, smiling.
In a few minutes,
I start to say, but she gives this very meaningful stare. I try again.
Right now?
Great! I'll walk you to work,
she says, standing abruptly, slipping her phone into her back pocket.
Let's go. I texted with Mina for 4 hours last night,
she says as soon as we step outside. It tumbles out of her mouth like she's been bursting to tell me.
Wow.
I know.
I feel Cassie looking at me, and I can tell she wants me to say something, or ask something. Maybe it's twin telepathy. I can just feel her excitement. It's like it has a pulse. Somehow, I don't think this is about finding me a boyfriend.
What did you talk about?
I ask.
Just, you know,
she laughs.
I honestly don't even know what we talked about. Music, photography, she does photography. We just talked about everything, really.
For 4 hours?
Yep.
She smiles. That's awesome. I pause.
Did you find out if she likes girls?
Molly, I don't know.
There's this edge to her tone, and it throws me. Okay, I say softly. And for a minute, we're both so quiet I can actually hear tweeting birds.
I should mention that Tacoma Park is beautiful. You kind of don't notice it most of the time, but then it hits you all at once. Like when it's 8:15 on a summer morning, and the sun is soft and filtered through tree branches, and the houses are brightly painted with porch swings and wind chimes and front steps lined with flowers. I think I just want to stare at the flowers. I want to walk up Tulip Avenue and be hungry and sleepy, and I want Cassie not to be annoyed with me. I guess asking her about Mina was a mistake. Though if she's going to be prickly about her own love life, it's pretty messed up that she's got her hands all over mine. Except a minute later, she says,
So, we're meeting Mina at Frozen Yo this afternoon to talk strategy.
Strategy?
For seducing the ginger? Operation Boyfriend. Operation Molly Makeouts.
Oh my God. Seriously? I shake my head.
Okay, well, I have to-
Molly, I know you have to work, but you get off at 3, and we're meeting her at 3:30, okay?
I don't want to intrude. I don't want to vag block you.
Molly! Cassie laughs. You can't vag block someone in a frozen yogurt shop. A frozen yogurt shop vag blocks itself.
That is true.
And seriously,
she looks at me.
I need you there.
She looks so sincere. Okay, I say finally.
Hell yeah!
Cassie high-fives me.
Oh man,
it's on!
3. So, this is probably my own fault for being a smartass, but I'm actually a little nervous about starting work, even though this isn't a brain surgery residency. I'm very glad this isn't a brain surgery residency. I don't think anyone wants me operating on their brain right now, or ever, especially because my hands are shaking, just a little, on the door handle. The store looks the same as it always does, which is to say, it looks like Zooey Deschanel exploded into 5,000 tablecloths and painted plates and letterpress note cards. It's called Bissell, not like the vacuum, like the Yiddish word meaning a little bit, as in, good luck only spending a Bissell of money when you walk into Bissell. Good luck not spending your entire paycheck on a Bissell of handcrafted artisan jewelry. I can't believe I'm walking into Bissell as an employee.
I'm an employee.
Deborah and Ari Wertheim, the owners, are behind the counter, and I feel this wave of shyness.
Hi,
I say, and my voice comes out comically high.
Squeaky Molly,
super professional. Deborah looks up from the register.
Molly, hi! Oh, great, you're here.
She presses both palms against the counter, beaming.
We are so, so glad you're joining us.
She's intensely nice. They both are. That's the main thing I remember about the Wertheims from my interview. They're nice in the way therapists are. Like, you get the impression they'd be up for hearing your thoughts about life and humanity. They're married, and they're a perfect match set. Tall and big-boned, with thick-framed glasses. Ari's bald, and Deborah has this kind of wild black hair she wears knotted into a messy bun. Or sometimes two meatball Sailor Moon buns, even though she's probably in her 40s. I really love that. Also, they both have these brightly colored, amazingly intricate tattoos all up and down their arms. Literally, they are the two coolest adult humans on the planet, or at least in Maryland. So I guess we probably went over most of this stuff at the interview. You remember how to use the register? I nod, even though I definitely don't remember how to use the register. Cool. Though the register is being an asshole today, so I'll probably stick you in the back room with Reed, and he can kind of show you around. You've met Reed? I don't think so. Oh, I'll introduce you. Deborah gives me a little shoulder squeeze. One sec. She walks toward the back of the store, through the baby section, and I try to act casual. There's music playing, something soft and indie. Cassie would know the band. And right beside me, there's a display of ceramic mugs shaped like whales. Of course Bissell sells ceramic mugs shaped like whales. Of course those exist. I literally don't understand how anyone could walk into this store and not fall in love. Deborah comes back a minute later with a guy I've actually seen here before. He's tall and kind of big, in that way people describe as husky. His shirt has a map of Middle Earth on it. And his sneakers are so electric white, they're either brand new or he puts them in the laundry. Molly, this is Reed. Reed, Molly.
Hi,
he says, smiling shyly. Hi. I smile back. Deborah turns to me. Molly, you're going to be a senior, right? I nod. Perfect. You guys are the same age. I bet you have a lot in common. Classic adult logic. Reed and I are vaguely the same age, so of course we're basically soulmates. It's like horoscopes. Somehow I'm supposed to believe that I'm similar in some meaningful way to every single person born on my birthday. Or every single Sagittarius. I mean, I barely have anything in common with Cassie, and we were born 6 minutes apart. Sorry, but this guy is literally choosing to advertise Lord of the Rings on his body. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of common ground. We walk through the baby section, and the whole time, I get the impression that he's trying to think of things to say. It reminds me a lot of those meaningless syllables people spew, like, yeah, so. Reed doesn't actually spew the syllables. He's like the personification of those syllables. I wish there were a secret signal you could use to communicate, "Hello, I am officially cool with silence." Not that I actually am cool with silence, but maybe it would help him relax. For a moment, we just stand there in the entryway to the back room, surrounded by cardboard boxes and rustic wooden furniture. I bite my lip, feeling awkward and unsettled.
"Welcome to your first day,"
he says finally. "Thanks." I smile, looking up at him. He's so tall, I actually have to tilt my head back. He's not awful looking. He definitely has good hair. It's this perfect tousled boy hair, brown and soft and sort of curly. And he wears glasses. And there's this sweetness to his mouth. I always notice people's mouths. "You've been working here for years, right?" I say. "I've seen you before." As soon as I say it, I blush. I don't want him to think I've noticed him. I mean, I have noticed him, but not in that way. I've noticed him because he sticks out here. He doesn't quite fit. I think of Bissell as a place for people who care about tiny details, like the texture of a woven placemat or the painted pattern on the handle of a serving spoon. I would say Reed gives a pretty strong impression that he doesn't notice patterns on serving spoons.
"Yeah, I'm here all the time. Kind of unavoidable."
He shrugs.
"My parents."
"Your parents?"
"Ari and Deborah."
I clap a hand over my mouth. "Ari and Deborah are your parents?"
"You didn't know that?"
He looks amused. I shake my head slowly. Okay, you just blew my mind.
Really?
He laughs.
Why?
Because, I don't know, Deborah and Ari just seem so punk rock and badass and not into Lord of the Rings. They have tattoos, I say finally. He nods.
They do.
I just gape for a minute. He laughs again.
You seem so surprised.
No, I'm just... I shake my head. I don't know. There's this silence.
So do you want to unpack some baby stuff?
Reed asks, nudging a cardboard box with the toe of his sneaker. We settle onto the floor next to it, cross-legged. I'm suddenly glad to be wearing leggings under my dress. Reed lifts a stack of onesies out of the box.
So these need price stickers,
he says.
Do you know how to do that?
Do I know how to use stickers?
It's pretty complicated,
he says. We grin at each other. I pick up a onesie. This is very Tacoma Park. It's undyed cotton, gender neutral, printed with a picture of vegetables. Seriously. Babies here are forced to declare their allegiance to vegetables before they're old enough to say, suck it, Mom, I want ice cream.
This is actually a reorder. We sold out of them last week.
Reed says. Of course it's a reorder.
Vegetables are just really popular right now.
He looks down and smiles. We work in silence, putting price stickers on the tags and folding the onesies up neatly again. When we finish, Reed says,
I think there are some swaddling blankets, too.
I pick one up, reading the label. Organic hemp.
Yes.
Really? I look at him. He laughs.
Really?
So I guess there are parents who like to roll their babies up like blunts. It's funny watching Middle Earth Reed while he works. All this delicate baby stuff, and he's the least delicate-looking person I've ever met. He's struggling to roll up the swaddling blankets. I think his hands are too big. Maybe this is why they hired me, for my smallish hands and my blunt-rolling abilities. He looks up at me suddenly.
So, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Just curious. Why are you so surprised about my parents' tattoos?
Because these people are related to you?
Is it because they're Jewish?
He adds. Oh, no! It's not that. I knew they were Jewish. I mean, the store is called Bissell. Their last name is Wertheim. He laughs.
Me too. I'm Reed Wertheim.
He leans forward and offers his hand for me to shake. He has a surprisingly confident handshake. Molly Peskin Suso, I say.
Peskin?
He says.
Are you Jewish too?
I am.
Really?
His eyes light up, and I know exactly what he's thinking. I don't think of myself as super Jewish or anything, and I basically never go to synagogue. But there's this thing I feel when I meet another Jewish person in the wild. It's like a secret, invisible high five. And it's funny. Normally, I go totally blank and silent when I meet a boy for the first time, which is how a person can end up having 26 crushes and zero kisses. But around Middle Earth Reed, I feel exactly as nervous as I'd feel around any new person. No more, no less. It's actually kind of wonderful. By 3 o'clock, Reed and I have unpacked, priced, and set out 6 boxes of baby stuff. And we've talked. There has been ample time for talking. So far, I've learned that he really likes Cadbury mini eggs. When I asked if this was relevant in June, he said, Cadbury mini eggs are always relevant. Apparently, he buys them in bulk after Easter and hoards them. Honestly, I respect that. I leave work exactly at 3, and the metro's on time, so I'm early to Silver Spring. I walk down Ellsworth Drive and lurk near the entrance of Frozen Yo. There are 50 billion restaurants here, and even on a weekday afternoon, it's packed with people. Dads pushing strollers and girls who look like they're my age but dress like they work in a bank. My moms talk a lot about how Silver Spring was better before it got gentrified. It's sad to think about. I guess it just sucks when change makes things worse. I lean against the side of the building so I can play on my phone. Social media is the actual worst today. It's one of those days where both Facebook and Instagram have been taken over by selfies, and they're not even the kind that own their selfiness. It's more the kind where the person is looking off in the distance, trying to seem candid. I need an anti-favorite button. Not that I'd actually use it, but still. I'm sort of wondering where Cassie and Mina are. Cassie's not usually late, but it's already 10 minutes past the time we're supposed to meet. I don't know whether to be grumpy or concerned. But at 3:45, I finally see them, walking together, giggling about something and carrying bags from H&M. They're not even rushing. Anti-favorite. Dislike. Hey, Cassie says. She smiles when she sees me. You remember Mina? From the bathroom. With the labia, Mina says. I can't help but giggle. Here's a frustrating thing about me. If everyone else is happy, I usually can't stay pissed off. My moods are conformists. It sucks, because sometimes you really want to be angry. Oh my god, I love your necklace, Mina adds. I blush. Oh, I made it. Are you serious? Yeah, it's easy. See, it's an old zipper. I lean forward to show her. You just cut off the end and unzip it and curve it into a heart, and then you sew the bottom together. Molly makes shit like that all the time, Cassie explains, but she says it sort of proudly. They set their bags on top of a table next to each other. I guess they spent the afternoon together shopping. Which is a horrifying group activity, if you ask me. Though maybe it's different for people with single-digit sizes. They probably modeled for each other. Maybe they got matching outfits. I pick up an empty yogurt cup. This is one of those places where you serve everything yourself. You can pick whatever yogurt flavors you want, and once you do that, there are 50 million toppings to choose from. There are people who can't handle this kind of freedom. But I can, and I rule at it. You just have to know your own tastes. I pay and sit down, and Mina settles in beside me. She peers into my cup. What'd you get? Chocolate with cookie dough? Like I said, I rule at this. Mina tilts her cup toward me, and of course she's one of those fundamentally confused people who mixes gummies with chocolate. So, Cassie said you go to Georgetown Day? I feel tongue-tied. Yep, I'll be a senior. Us too. And do you do photography? You know everything, she says. Which makes me blush. I don't know. I feel like a creeper. I always seem to know more about people than they know about me. I feel an awkward silence blooming. I have to head it off at the pass. Our friend Olivia does photography, I say quickly. Oh, cool, Mina says. I mean, I'm really new at it. Will, you met him, the redhead. He's actually super talented, but he's teaching me the basics. He has this software where you can tweak the lighting and color on the images after you upload them, and he's going to teach me how to do sun flares. Mina pauses. I'm talking too much, aren't I? No, I talk a lot when I'm nervous. You're nervous? I ask. She shrugs, smiling. I don't know. This feels so formal, right? Like, isn't this weird? To put actual effort into becoming friends? I guess so, I say. My friends and I were never like, hey, let's be friends. It's more like, yeah, okay, you're there and you're cool. That's literally what I said to Cassie in the womb, I say. She laughs, scratching an invisible spot on her arm, which makes the sleeve of her shirt ride up, revealing the edge of a tattoo. I can't quite make out what it's a picture of. But seriously, this girl has a tattoo. And she's in high school. I feel slightly inadequate. Cassie slides in across from me. You take forever, Mina says. Yes, but decisions. That's Cassie. Every time we come here, she takes her flavor profile deadly seriously, but she always gets the exact same thing. Vanilla yogurt. And some type of gummy. Memo to Cassie. All gummies taste the same. They honestly do.
Okay, I have to finish telling you about my theory, Cassie says.
She shovels a spoonful of yogurt into her mouth.
So, Molly, you missed this, but we were talking about ancestors.
What? I ask.
Like, ancestors. Like, all your relatives who died before you were born.
Why were you talking about this?
Cassie pauses, her spoon midair. Oh, I don't remember.
Well, first we were talking about sperm donation, Mina says, and whether or not your sperm donor's relatives count as your relatives.
Right, Cassie says. But okay, here's my theory. You've got your ancestors, and they're just hanging out in heaven or hell. FYI, this is not like a rabbi-endorsed official tenet of Judaism.
I gathered that. I smile a little.
Right. So, here's what I think. They're sitting around, drinking ambrosia and everything.
This is definitely not rabbi-endorsed. She ignores me.
And then one of their descendants has a baby. And it's you. And as soon as you're born, for your whole life, your ancestors get to watch everything. And they're rooting for you and discussing among themselves, but they're not allowed to intervene. They just watch. It's like a reality show.
A really, really boring reality show, I say.
Yeah, but it's not boring to them, you know? Because you're their descendant.
Cassie clasps her hands together.
So they're invested.
Mina purses her lips around her spoon and nods.
And then when you eventually get old and die, Cassie continues, you show up in heaven where you're basically a fucking celebrity. And your ancestors are like, yeah, I was shipping you with that other girl, but it's cool. And sorry you got old and died, though. And you're like, yeah, that sucked, but you know.
Cassie shrugs.
And so then you actually become one of the ancestors. And the next time a baby is born, you get to watch everything. And the cycle continues.
That's horrifying, says Mina. Cassie tilts her head.
How so?
Having a bunch of dead people watching you all the time? Watching you pee and have sex and masturbate and, like, discussing it with each other?
Ew, no. Cassie shakes her head quickly. They're not creepers. They're not watching that stuff. And anyway, they have, like, a million descendants to keep up with, so it's not like they can watch anyone that closely. It's more like flipping through the channels.
But see, that's not what you said, Mina argues, poking the air with her spoon. And I like this. I like watching Cassie get challenged. I think Cassie likes it too.
Well, I'm still tweaking the theory, Cassie says, smiling.
Good. Make sure no dead people are watching me pee,
Mina says.
Then she glances at me and groans, covering her face. God, Molly, you must think I only talk about peeing and labia.
That is true, I say. She sticks her tongue out at me. And in that moment, I realize I might actually be becoming friends with this girl. That's two legit new friends today, and it's not even 4:30.
Mina of the labia and Middle Earth Reed. A pretty good day's work. I feel myself smiling.
Cassie nods. Okay, so let's say certain things are censored. They're not allowed to watch you in the bathroom or having sex or anything like that.
But you can't just decide that, Mina says. This isn't a reality show pitch. It's a metaphysical theory.
But it's my metaphysical theory, Cassie sniffs.
I roll the idea around in my head for a moment. It's funny. I think I actually like it. I find it strangely comforting. I guess it's nice to imagine a room full of people caring about what happens to you, rooting for your happiness. They'd be pissed off when someone was a jerk to you. They'd want your crush to like you back. They'd want all 26 of them to like you back. You would matter. That's the thing. I get into this weird place sometimes where I worry about that. I've never told anyone this, not my mom's, not even Cassie. But that's the thing I'm most afraid of. not mattering. Existing in a world that doesn't care who I am. It's this whole other level of aloneness. And maybe it's a twin thing. I have never truly been alone in the world. I think that's why I fear it. They're watching us right now, Cassie says. She tilts her face to the ceiling. Hey, ancestors, you guys should try Froyo. It's the best. She gives them a thumbs up. Mina buries her face in her arms and just laughs. 4. Of course, Mina is the only thing Cassie wants to talk about for the rest of the week. Anytime we're alone together, anytime our moms aren't around. She slides onto the couch beside me on Friday, just as I'm settling in to watch Teen Mom.
Did you know Mina's Korean? She asks. Korean-American, actually.
Yep, you mentioned that.
So, like, her parents were born here, but she has relatives in South Korea, and she's taking a trip there in August. I think she's going to do a photography project.
I mean, I'm not one of those people who can't handle commentary during TV shows, but it should be commentary about the TV show.
For example, I am completely cool with Nadine ranting about the rat-faced, why are they so virile, why do you even watch this, baby dads?
Cassie leans back, legs in a pretzel.
And she really likes penguins.
Penguins. No respect for the baby dads. I'm glad she likes penguins. This actually reminds me of Abby, when she started dating her first real boyfriend. We were 15, and he was in her math class. And it was one of those things where every word out of Abby's mouth was Daryl. Daryl hates applesauce. Daryl's a really good dancer. Daryl went to Florida once. Like Abby got some kind of thrill from saying his name.
Also, Cassie says casually, Mina's pansexual.
I pause the TiVo and sit up ramrod straight. Wait, what? I ask. Cassie buries her face in a throw pillow. How do you know?
I asked her, and she told me.
Cassie, I gasp into my hand. Are you kidding me? This is so awesome.
Yeah, well, it doesn't mean she likes me.
I twist all the way around to look at her.
Not that it matters,
she adds, smiling faintly. She hugs the pillow and sighs. Cass, I don't think I've ever seen her like this. Cassie flirts with girls all the time, and she's usually charming and sometimes careless and sometimes focused, but never, ever vulnerable. I've never seen her look nervous.
It matters, I say softly. I mean, yes, she's fucking adorable. Yes, I want to make out with her.
Cassie groans into her pillow. Oh my gosh, you have a crush. This is a real crush.
Whatever,
she says. But her cheeks tell the story, and they're basically radioactive. It's usually me who does this. I blush and swoon and am essentially the heroine of a romance novel, except with 100% less kissing. But Cassie? Not so much. Until now. And it's fascinating.
Why are you looking at me like that?
She asks. My mouth twitches. I'm not.
I hate you.
She's grinning, and I grin back at her.
Cassie has kissed a fair number of girls.
And believe me, I've heard about every molecule of saliva involved in these transactions. And yet, something's different with Mina. I wake up Saturday to a text from Abby. Not that this is unusual, because Abby isn't just my cousin. Other than Cassie, she's my best friend, even more than Olivia. It's funny, because Cassie and Abby are the bold ones, and Olivia and I are the quiet ones. But when we pair off, it's usually Cassie and me, Abby and Olivia, or Abby and me, Cassie and Olivia. Friendship is like that. I guess it's not always about common ground. Anyway, Abby used to live 2 blocks away from us, but she moved to Georgia a year ago. It sucks, but we talk every week, and we text so much, it's like a single ongoing conversation. When I tap into the text window, there are actually 2 messages. The first says,
We need to talk ASAP.
The second is a winky face emoji. In certain contexts, a winky face is a clear code for sex. So I guess this means Abby had sex with her boyfriend last night. I should mention